Let me ask real quick. When we talk about manhood, we talk about your own manhood. We talk about your own journey as a man. What are some of the key factors or experiences that have helped shape your understanding of manhood? What's a couple of y'all just want to? What'd you put down?
I was a counselor for a discipleship program for a summer camp of defining biblical manhood.
Okay. So a program you went through helped shape your understanding of manhood. Mm-hmm. How old were you when that happened?
This was summer of 2015.
So how old were you when that happened?
22.
22?
No. Yeah.
All right. So 22 years in that. Had a big experience there. What about? Yeah, Jimmy?
Just the just the people that my parents put in my life, the grown men that they would associate with.
Yeah.
And they would just live their life. And I would get to see how they would live, and they were fantastic examples. And it wasn't just one person,
it was
multiple people throughout my whole entire childhood.
Yeah.
Up until now still.
So some very positive influences, some key people in your life that help shape that. Okay. Who else? Right. Derek?
My father going to prison when I was 8.
Yeah.
Helped shape my understanding of manhood.
Interesting. So not a positive deal, a negative deal really helped. A negative experience with your own dad going away. Man, that shaped tremendously. Is your dad still in prison?
Yep.
Yeah. So that shaped your manhood big time. How old were you when he went in?
8.
8. Wow.
Got out when I was, 18.
Okay.
Just went back.
Just went back. All right. Yeah. Anybody else?
Hip-hop.
Really? Some music and really hip-hop culture has helped shape your understanding of manhood quite a bit.
Probably negatively.
Yeah, I was going to say, which version of hip-hop you've been submersed in? Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the biggest questions you have as we head into this? Biggest tensions maybe you have? Any?
Well, distinctions.
Distinctions.
Distinctions. There's this, I guess, growing up, it's been shaped in me, this understanding that, men are, we like to go hunting.
Yeah.
Women shouldn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They shouldn't go hunting. They should, what kind of these, should do or shouldn't do. And
yeah.
These things that are based on
what are culturally imposed upon us,
right.
And what are biblically designed. That's exactly what we want to wrestle with. Yeah. Jimmy.
Just, I based my challenges on who I described manhood to be in question one, and it's for me a challenge is doing that 24/7.
Okay.
Because when things get here, I'm okay, but when things get here, I get fed up and I quit and I make excuses instead of solutions.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not being a man.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say more of just, I don't know, I think church is kind of hit home with that distinction type of thing, because, I'm having a struggle of where does that lie at, because obviously my dad's been in jail all my life. I barely seen what he looked like face to face last year. So, I have no idea what that looked like, because I don't know how to fix a lick on anything of the car. Nobody taught me how to change the oil. Nobody taught me how to fix something in the house if it goes broken. All I learned was how to cook, because I had my mom. Learn how to cook, learn how to figure things out when you don't. Look at YouTube. I call it YouTube Daddy. So when you want to learn something, how to fix something, you look at YouTube and that teaches you.
I completely resonate with that 100%,
yeah.
Bro.
And then so it's just like, and then I'm just wondering, because I'm not career oriented, a lot of my friends are, that are going to school, and then here I'm pursuing, Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sometimes I just kind of feed into I'm not sure if it's a lie, trying to distinguish where it's just like, hey, well, that's good and all when you're gonna step into the real world though.
Yeah.
It's just like, am I supposed to have a backup plan other than a theological degree or?
Yeah.
Supposed to be.
A lot of confusion out there, man.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Questions, tensions you have heading into this? Yeah.
Tension that I have usually is just how both Christian and secular cultures are trying to change or allowing men to be lazy in areas of what manhood should be.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating for me.
Yeah.
Because it feeds into it as like a sinful desire that I have sometimes.
Yeah. So, passivity, big issue out there, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
I had a couple things written. They don't exist in our culture. We don't have examples of heroes.
What's they that doesn't exist?
Biblical men.
Biblical
as
men.
Far as, like, in a cultural overview, we don't necessarily have examples to look to or heroes to put our faith in.
Oh, in the worldly, secular culture, it's hard to find a
right.
biblical example of manhood out there, yeah.
I'm tired of feminism shaping our worldview.
Interesting. I'd love to dive in and find out what your definition of feminism is, you know, because it's interesting. Even feminism has really become nuanced, where there are some folks that anchor a positive end of feminism and others that anchor in a negative one. But absolutely, I think we're going to look at a little bit of that today. Yeah. Anything else? Anything else pressing on you? Come on, Derek.
For me, culture, I have a tension in cultural ties versus biblical manhood.
Yeah.
Like what Kyle was saying.
Yeah.
The world influencing what manhood is,
yeah.
our
yeah.
culture, where we came from, versus
yeah.
what it really is in Scripture.
That's right. So hard to parse those out. Mm-hmm. I've said it since day one, man. We are being discipled right now. It's just a matter of whose voice are we listening to, right? Our culture is discipling us. And part of that's inevitable. Part of that's just Acts 17, God determining the times and the habitations, and he places us there. And some of that is good and redemptive, and some of that is incredibly destructive. And how do I discern what's what, right? That's why it's going to be so important over these next several weeks that we really dive into the Scriptures. Today we're going to do a lot of observation just from our culture. But in the weeks to come, we're going to really try to mine the Scriptures and go, does God really speak to this? Does he really tell us what his design for biblical manhood is as set up against or within culture? So, yeah. Well, do me a favor. Pass down your sheets if you got them. Because what I end up doing with these, we take these. The women have done the same thing for womanhood. And we put these together. And I don't care about your names, so we won't put any of that in there. But just for simply data, we'll find the consistent things across the board that are the biggest tensions, questions that we see. We're going to find the biggest common denominators that help shape you as men and our ladies as women. And it's interesting just to kind of put those down on paper and just kind of get a feel of what is it that's really driving and shaping us. What's up, B? Whoa, dude. Shirt's tucked in, bro. You're looking sharp. It is, dude. It is.
It is Dress Up Wednesday, right?
It is. I just can't do that because I have a little Dunlop disease where your belly Dunlopped over your belt, you know? So can't quite tuck that in.
I'm wearing
Spanx. Oh, gross. Oh, man. So we're going to dive in. We're going to wrestle. We're going to wrestle. There's a lot of things that have shaped, and what we're going to really process here this morning, we're going to look at seven realities of manhood. Seven realities that we're seeing right now, 2017, just in our culture in general. What are some realities that are common to man? And some of you have already shared a lot of these that we're going to talk about. It's the same common strains of DNA that is in every one of us right now in our culture that's been helping shape our manhood. And then we're going to look briefly at five contributors. What is it that has primarily shaped the realities we're experiencing? And we're going to look at it on a cultural scale. Next week, we're going to look at more of a biblical, we'll look at the DNA of sin, how sin has shaped this, but we're going to look at what are some cultural contributors in our Western culture. I'm not looking at the Middle East, I'm not looking at Europe, our Western culture that has shaped us who are sitting in this room right now in many ways. And so let's look at those. Somebody want to pray for us, man, as we dive in here this morning? Yeah. Kyle?
God, thank you for this morning that we as men get to get together with Shay and learn what your mandate for us to be men looks like. Would you guide this time and help us to be patient and listen well and learn well as well? God, we love you and thank you in your name. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Well, let's look at seven quick realities of manhood as we've seen today. And I heard probably several of these in just the statements you just shared. Seven quick things. Number one of the things we are seeing across the board in our culture with men in general is a tremendous amount of confusion. Tremendous amount of confusion. Who was it that mentioned that specifically? Was that you, Kyle? One of y'all talked about just confusing? Or maybe Aaron, I don't know. Anyways, just blame Troy. Just a lack of clarity and confidence about who I am as a man, my identity, just why am I here? There's not really a North Star concerning why I exist, why I was brought into this world. Like, what is my compass, man? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? Who am I supposed to be in the 70 by strength 80 that I may have on planet Earth? And most boys growing up today have never really had a clear pathway to biblical manhood. Like, I want you to think about that for just a second. Did any of you, and maybe there's a few, certainly, but anybody from the very young age, somebody sat you down on their lap or pulled you inside and just, son, let me tell you why you exist biblically. Let me give you a North Star. And I'm talking about even those of you that came from Christian parents. Did they sit you down, somebody, early on in life, and go, I'm going to tell you why God brought you into this earth. And I'm going to show you the end game, and I'm going to help you every step of the way to get to this end game that God has designed you for. Truth be known, probably very few of us have had that. Even if we've had positive influences, we've not had somebody clearly and definitively give us a North Star that tells me as a man why I'm here. And because of that, man, there's confusion in there. For a lot of us, we didn't have a model at home. No godly role models that we could look to, no mentors in many ways. A lot of us, spiritual mentors. A lot of us have had coaches and we've had, you know, key men in our life to some degree, but those spiritual compasses have been lacking. And left to ourselves, often what's going to happen is we're going to end up getting confused. And when confusion comes in, when we don't have lack of clarity why we're here, the second thing that begins to result as that, as reality, is once we hit confusion, we then move to drifting. Because we don't have a biblical North Star for why we're here, think about that, man. Some of y'all, I'm trying to remember, some of y'all are old enough, this generation still has a little bit where before iPhones, when you were a kid and you went on trips, your parents had to bust out them old giant Rand McNally maps. Y'all remember those, man? Y'all still old enough, young enough to remember that?
I still have one.
Yo, MapQuest, okay, so maybe you're a digital printout, right? You didn't have either your GPS, what are the GPS guys called? Garmin. Yeah, thank you. You didn't have a Garmin there. You didn't have your iPhone up on your dash. It was either you're printing out MapQuest, or you've got those giant Rand McNally books you'd buy at Walmart or something. Remember those?
Go down to AAA and be like, hey, I need a map for this area.
Yeah, there you go. But back in the day, man, if you didn't have a map, you don't know where you're going. And new roads that get developed that aren't put on the map yet, you know, like throw you off, there becomes confusion, and confusion leads to drifting. You're not really pressing the gas anywhere because you don't know where to go. the gravity of our flesh, the gravity of our culture, with no eternal power or purpose to counter it, is like an astronaut losing its tether. Just drifts in. Y'all see the movie Gravity? Dude, God, man, that freaked me. I saw that 3D IMAX. Freaking messed with me, man. Did you go see that up at Edwards? Oh, gosh. We sat there with my wife and I, man, watching that IMAX. I was like, oh, crap, man, I hope that never happened. I mean, that's scary.
What is it about? Think about it. We're doing that right now, though.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, we are. We are doing that. More times than not, though, men will become reactive to life rather than proactive. I want you to think about that in your own story right now. How much of your daily interactions and pursuits are reactive versus proactive? Most of us are simply reacting to what culture throws to us. We're not being proactive towards anything because a lot of us don't really have that North Star, even as believers. And yeah, we know, man, it's about Jesus, it's about his glory, about his kingdom, but nobody's given you a map for what that really means as a man. And so we begin to put all our hope and all our worth into the mirages of creation rather than into our Creator. And then what happens next, as soon as there's confusion that leads to drifting, the inevitable next thing that will come is disappointment in life. It becomes disappointment. When God designed you for a particular purpose, you end up settling for false substitutes. When your eternally wired expectations aren't met in your temporary finite pursuits, they will eventually disappoint you. Unmet expectations disappoint. And I think it's a huge reason why so many of our men in our culture are still trying to figure out why so many of their pursuits just aren't fulfilling. I mean, they really aren't. Why do we have a term in our culture called midlife crisis? Because there is an inner sense within all of us that just life becomes futile at some point when you've tried and tried and tried to put your significance in so many things and they just disappoint. And when that happens, by the way, once there's confusion that leads to drifting, drifting leads to disappointment, and disappointment ultimately will lead to unresolved wounds. Unresolved wounds. For most men, when disappointments are unmet, are encountered and expectations are unmet in home or work or relationships, those disappointments begin to mount and they begin to develop craters within our soul called wounds. And the problem that persists from there is that most men often don't know how to diagnose what those wounds are. They're expressing or suppressing behaviors based on wounds, because that's what happens. When we're wounded and we aren't able to identify it and let alone resolve it biblically, those wounds, we either act out on them in expression or we bury them in suppression. So we either medicate them out or we angrily express them out or act out in a harmful way. And that's what happens with these wounds. And so those wounds over time go unresolved. Unresolved, undiagnosed, and unresolved. And so what happens, yeah.
So it's,
what's that?
Either act out an oppression or suppress it.
Expression or suppression. Okay. So when you have a wound, and we're going to look at some wounds that are a part of our DNA, a lot of us are either going to have, we're going to look at both of these to come. Some of us are going to have what we're going to call absent father wounds. And the other side of that is going to be an overly bonded with mother wound. And we're going to look at those two in detail as we progress further into these weeks. And what happens with a lot of these guys is you don't know how to handle them, so you either express in harmful, dangerous ways, usually in anger or some sort of abuse, or we suppress them. I'm just going to numb out. I'm going to turn into a Netflix junkie. I'm going to turn into a porn addict. I'm going to go hit hardcore drugs, whatever it may be, to bury this sucker because I'm feeling so hurt, but I don't know what the heck this is in me. I don't know how to put a name on it, let alone find a resolution to it.
You're not supposed to have them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lie. So drifting leads to disappointment in life that leads to unresolved wounds. All that originally stemming from confusion. And ultimately, when those wounds go unmet, unresolved for too long, it leads to loneliness and despair. Loneliness and despair. Over time, many men just begin to give up. They begin to let go of hope. And rather than drawing near to others who can help or the one who can help, most men tend to withdraw and disconnect. And the irony here is that we're in the most connected time, connected generation that has ever existed on planet Earth. Because of technology, we are more connected to resources and people than we have ever been in our life. But yet the irony is we're more lonely than we've ever been. Isn't that interesting, man? I mean, I think about your life right now as compared to your parents' generation before you. Because of Facebook right now, like literally last night, I'm connected to a friend who's walking through a divorce right now that I haven't seen in 15 years. And yet, like this, I can enter back in because Facebook connected me to that reality. But yet, one generation ago, that high school friend, you may never see again if you moved out of state, you know? So we're more connected than we've ever been, but we're more lonely. And with that, biblical intimacy and gospel-centered community that helps shape biblical manhood is at an all-time deficit. It's at an all-time deficit. Today, men neither know or are known by anybody else. They don't either don't know or they're not known. They can't know or be known. We live in these vacuums. And when this happens, almost without fail, once this loneliness and despair sinks in, the next inevitable result or reality that gets shaped is an escape to alternative realities. When a man hits confusion and drifting and disappointment, unresolved wounds that leads to loneliness and despair, the next thing that man is going to pursue at some point in his life is escape to alternative realities. Because we're bored, because we're confused, and because we're wounded, men begin looking for pleasure outside of their designed purpose. So we turn to hobbies, we turn to toys, we turn to games, we turn to work, we turn to affairs, we turn to pornography, we turn to addictions, we turn to gangs, we turn to wanderlust, because we just don't know how to live in the reality that exists right now. We've got to have it. That's why I say, man, I'm just calling the shot right now. It's already on us, but this whole VR culture we're heading into is going to be the epitome of it. Right now, man, they've invented VR pornography.
They have already?
Yes. Where right now, you can put on a pair of goggles and attach a machine and go to work. And you don't ever have to have another human relationship experience ever. Right now, man, you can go, man, it is creating fantasy land, and they're creating, this isn't just, I'm talking like, just like, Nintendo or Xbox games coming out. We're talking about an industry that's creating little shops that you can go to where you just like a hookah lounge, except it's going to be a VR lounge where it's going to take you to another. It's like the Matrix, man. It's going to take you to a whole other world. Well, what's fueling that? It's this desire for escape.
What about religion? Is that in that list?
For alternative or for escapes? Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Why do you think Islam is so attractive to men right now? And especially, so you get into it, black men right now. Islam. Why?
It's like the religion of peace.
Well, for a lot of guys, it's quite the opposite, right?
Strength.
It's strength and power. And it's, I'm looking for this hill to conquer, this mountain to conquer. I want some sort of outer existential experience connected with a higher power. And you know what? Christianity looks like a girl sport. That looks like a man sport. I want it. And it is attracting more men than any other religion on planet Earth right now. It's fascinating when you get into some of those studies. But we pursue all these things, and yet we have the reverse consequences. We think in them we will find life, but in reality, what we will find is death. And what becomes, gentlemen, when you get addicted to your hobbies and your toys and pornography and these other escapes, they become the Eskimo's knife. Y'all know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Y'all know how the Eskimo used to catch their prey? They would take a knife to catch wolves, and they would take a knife, they would dip it in blood, dip it in the snow, and freeze it. Dip it in blood, dip it in snow. Dip it in blood, dip it in snow. Dip it in blood, dip it, until you have this giant coat, thick coat of blood on the blade, and you know what they do right before they go to bed? They take the blade, turn it upside down, stick the handle in the snow, and leave it overnight. And the wolves come in the middle of the night. They smell that blood, and they go up to the knife, and they just start licking. And they just start lapping. And before you know it, it is an insatiable lapping. They can't get enough of it, and they're just licking, 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 and they don't realize they're drinking their own blood. And they bleed out, and they die. And that's how the Eskimos catch them. It's the same way with our addictions in our culture right now. We think in these things we are finding pleasure in these escapes. They are Eskimos' knives, and they're killing us. And our great enemy, Satan, has set it up just perfectly. And the question you're going to have to ask, what are your Eskimos' knives right now? What are the things you're consumed with? You think work and addicting yourself to work is the answer? You are going to drink your own blood. You think falling headlong into sexual addiction is going to provide this escape? You're drinking your own blood. And that's the case with all of us. We're all going to have to identify our own Eskimos knives. And all of us have different bents and therefore going to run to different things outside of what God has designed for us. And what happens lastly and finally when that happens is self-inflicted carnage, otherwise known as death. Self-inflicted carnage. Just look at the statistics right now of crime in our culture. 90% of all murders, who are they committed by? Men. 88% of all robberies, who are they committed by? Men. 75% of all arrests, men. Men commit more crimes, period. And on top of crimes, start adding in factors like divorce, wrecked homes, abdicated fathering, all kinds of other collateral damage that don't just affect you, they affect your kids and your kids' kids. Like, I started thinking about this. My dad walked out on my mom. My dad divorced my mom when I was 3 years old, walked out on his three sons, and I grew up with a classic absent father wound. And I thought about that. That decision he made didn't just affect him. It didn't just affect my mom. It affected me and my brothers, right? And then I thought, it didn't even just affect us. It's affected my daughters. So we're now two generations down. It affected them because now they grow up having to go visit in multiple places different grandparents, who, by the way, are now all passed away, so they don't even have that. And it didn't just affect them. It's going to affect their kids. Why? Because my daughters are going to parent in a way where it's going to be, they're going to be having the first time, if the Lord allows my wife and I to live, for their kids to have grandparents around, and my girls don't have a class for that. They don't have a category for that. So four generations are affected by one man's decision before, Lord willing, that chain gets broken and turned around. Four generations. It never affects just you. Self-inflicted carnage. Now, how do we get there? We're going to look at that next week. We're going to take the next couple of weeks, and we're going to go back to Genesis, which Mike already walked you through. But we're going to study Genesis 1, 2, and 3 through a specific filter and lens of manhood and see if some things don't re-pop out that maybe y'all missed the first time you walked in it. And we're going to look at what sin in that garden actually did to manhood on its deepest level. But before we go there next week, I want to take a little bit of time here. I want to show you a quick video, and then we're going to go into some small group discussion. Quick video highlighting five modern contributors that have existed in the last 100 years that you may not even be aware of that have shaped and are shaping your life right now. And we're going to look at 5 contributors here. And I want you to see how these have affected us in our culture, how they have changed the DNA. The same is true with food right now. You ever wonder why we have so much either celiac disease or gluten intolerance right now? Listen, man, I'm 42 years old, almost 43. That was not the issue at all when I was a kid. You never heard about gluten anything. Never. And all you hear about it, why? Ask the question, why? Is it just because all of a sudden, are we going to blame this one on millennials? Yeah, see? No, it's everybody in our culture right now. There's so many. Why is this true? And they're having true issues. Rick Taylor cannot eat any sort of bread at all, or many. It goes into crazy cramps. Why? Because over time, the way that we have produced wheat has changed. And our bodies have not adapted to it yet. So literally, something that happened outside of us in culture is changing the DNA makeup of our bodies. You can do the same thing when you study food diets from throughout world history and who eats what and what part of the world and how that's affect their body. Why are Americans so much bigger than everybody else, you know? I mean, you go walk over in other countries. I remember when we went to Thailand, they called the rest of us Snow White because they all felt like the dwarves that were walking around us. Why are Americans typically so much bigger? Well, look at our diets. Look how much meat we consume. Look how much corn we consume. Look how much our diets, they change your body. Well, in the same way, there are 5 key things that have happened in the last 100 years that have altered our manhood realities right now. And so let's look at some of these things. Did this just turn off? What's happening right now? Okay. All right, here we go.
Racism. The evils of slavery, the caste system of the Jim Crow laws, and sustained prejudice, even today, have placed additional pressures on African American and other minority cultures. These unfortunate realities have contributed to a chain of events that oftentimes removed minority men from their homes, left young minority boys without male role models, limited growth and leadership opportunities for minority men, and created many other unfortunate challenges that have helped contribute to the current manhood crisis. Another dynamic that contributed arose when we shifted from an agrarian culture to an industrial culture. For many families up until that point, the young son would live the majority of his life next to dad. There was a great chance that dad worked in the fields behind the house. His son would see and be around his dad in the best hours of his day throughout all 4 seasons of the year. He would observe firsthand dad's work ethic, his creativity, his problem solving, and his leadership.
Industrial. Yeah.
In the wake of the Industrial Revolution, the norm for dad changed. Instead of working out of his home with his son tagging along, he would get up early, commute to work an 8 to 10 hour day, then come home later that evening. All he had left for his wife and kids were a few meager tidbits of himself, the leftovers. The Industrial Revolution helped set in motion the idea that raising kids was woman's work. A man's job was only to go to work and put a roof over his family's head and food on the table. Somehow, men are supposed to be okay with this minimal, non-connected existence. As a result, mom was forced to fill in for dad. And many boys grew up without dad being around, and therefore, no male role model. He was taught almost everything by mom or other women in his life. These women were courageous and vital. However, it takes a man to call a boy to manhood. Then there was the negative impact of the war years on a generation of men. Many of our grandfathers and great-grandfathers were part of the greatest generation. They exchanged their youth for war, and the virtues they valued were sacrifice and duty. But many of those men who engaged in battle had trouble engaging emotionally with their families after those wars. Because of this lack of emotional engagement, many sons of war veterans felt their dads took their fathering lightly and were disconnected from them relationally. Unfortunately, it was true. The war had not only taken them away from their families, it had changed many of them. Upon their return, far too many knew only to focus on hard work or other escapes from their trauma. Many of them didn't connect emotionally with their families, and that lack of engagement impacted their children and grandchildren. Feminism came to life in the second half of the 20th century. It originally sought equality. That's a great thing because men and women are equal. But the feminist quest later turned to sameness. Some segments of the feminist movement basically said that there are no differences between men and women. That left many men unsure how to act, with a lack of clarity about their role as men. Some even raised the question of whether men have a role or uniqueness at all. Anyone brave enough to ask that question is often criticized. In a world of sameness, no one seems to know for sure what a man is, or if he is even necessary. Now we have a more recent phenomenon called extended adolescence. Too many of our young men are choosing not to grow up. Instead of transitioning to adulthood in their early 20s, many young men are delaying adulthood into their late 20s or even their early 30s. Instead of transitioning boys to men, our culture has created a third place between boy and man. Several books have even been written describing this phenomenon. One author calls these guys boys who shave, and another labels it guyland. This phenomenon has a number of our young men stuck in an extended adolescence. Guys who choose just to drift along in life and take no responsibility for themselves, much less anybody else. They are only focused on their own comfort and the next big thrill. They are flatline on things that really do matter, like getting out of debt, seeking meaningful relationships, pursuing a job, providing for a family, and living with a mission, a cause that is bigger than themselves. These are boys who go to college or go into life and create their own guyland. They are no more socially mature or responsible at age 30 than they were in their teens. Somehow our culture gives them a free pass for an entire decade or more. These are the historical events and movements that have impacted manhood today. This is our history. This is our story. And all have helped contribute to a crisis in masculinity. Where will we go from here? How can we deal with and overcome these realities? What will your story be?
So, well, man.
Looks like we have our work cut out for us, man.
Yeah, we do.
How are we going to overcome?
I don't know, bro. No, this is off a this is off a 33 series that my college pastor made. I'll leave those up, those titles, because they're nuanced a little bit. So. What's that?
Is that accessible?
Yeah. Yeah, it's on Right Now Media is one way you can get that.
I have an account.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Certainly, fellas, there are other experiences that have affected your manhood growing up. But when you look at us from a broad sweep as a culture, those are really five defining things. Racism and prejudice starting in the 1600s going forward that affected our country. That shift in the Industrial Revolution from the turn of the century, from 1800s to 1900s, when you went into the, from an agrarian-based society where everybody's little house on the prairie working with their dad, to now moving into commuting 45 minutes, 2 hours, heading downtown and being away from your family all day, to World War II in the 1940s, which took a considerable percentage of our men away from home, come back, where the things they saw on the battlefield are having a hard time. It's the reason why that generation known as the Greatest Generation, which is the 1940s World War II crew, their kids, the baby boomers, they are the same ones that will tell you, my dad never told me he loved me.
Yeah.
Why? Because dad didn't know how. And that leaves a mark on a generation. And post-World War II did that. Feminism in the 1960s, as you heard, where equality, yes, and amen. Sameness, countering the biblical lens of God's design for man and woman. And has crippled men, which led them confused, identityless, passive, like I don't even know how to act now in many ways. And then, of course, on top of that, what we're seeing today, which is just a whole new wave of extended adolescence, right? Young guys who just, man, really just don't know how to grow up. And because their generation before them, their parents before them, only know how to coddle, don't know how to lead. And it's distorted. Now, we're not going to spend our days bashing culture and making excuses. This doesn't make an excuse. This just helps explain. And what we're going to do is dive in the weeks to come to what is the biblical lens that shows us where this started within sin and shows us how it gets redeemed. Okay, so we're going to look at what God designed, how that got distorted, and how it gets redeemed over the next several weeks, and then deal with some specific issues that I mentioned, like the absent father wound or the overly bonded with mother wound. And we're going to look at those, and then we're going to move forward. Here's what I want to do now. We ought to break up, and maybe 2-3 groups out of this. I don't know. I'm not real worried. But 2-3 groups, y'all get together. Y'all are just going to self-discuss. I've got some questions here that are going to go as follows. What are 3 words that you would use to describe your current state of manhood? 3 words that you're going to use, and why those 3? Second, what if any manhood realities, these realities right here, what if any of these resonates with your own experience the most? Like, is there one of these where you go, man, yeah, I resonate with those the most? Have any of the modern contributors that we just looked at, have any of these personally affected you that you can tell? And then I want you to spend the last just few minutes together just praying for one another, all right? So I'm going to pass these out. Take these. Break up here. You got about 35 minutes. A little chunk of time.
Yeah.
Spread out. Get some groups together. I'd say at least 3. As many as 5. 3 to 5. And then again, y'all just pray and close out in your time.